Welcome to the Reversing Diabetes Podcast with Delaine, the MD, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place.
Hello, welcome to the podcast. You are listening to the Reversing Diabetes with Delaine, MD podcast. This is a special episode. I have a colleague and friend on today, Dr. Jennifer Jackson. I'm going to introduce her here in a moment. Before we do, I want to make sure that you're aware of the five-day free session coming up in November, November 15th through the 19th. This is a session where basically I run it like my group. There's information that's presented, and then there's group coaching that goes on. If you're interested in that, make sure you go to my website and sign up, www.delainemd.com. If for some reason you can't get registered on my website, send me an email, delaine@delainemd.com. I will get you registered. This particular program is really focused on helping you get through the holidays without your health getting worse. Statistically, we know, and the medical evidence supports, that you will actually be less healthy at the end of the holiday season than you were when you began it. And usually we don't undo those negative health impacts in the next year. So in 2022, you're not going to undo it unless you get help. So make sure you show up for this five-day free session. This is a free session for women with type 2 diabetes. If you meet that category, if you meet those qualifications, get registered. If you're not sure, send me an email, delaine@delainemd.com. And if not, is there another way I can help you out? I want to introduce my colleague, Jennifer Jackson. I'm so appreciative of her work and what she does. She currently serves as the Associate Program Director for KU Internal Medicine Residency Program here in Wichita, Kansas. She is a board certified internal medicine doctor. In addition to that, she is also board certified in hospice and palliative care. She works as a full-time hospitalist at one of the hospitals here in Wichita. Her passion is really in research and teaching about real food diets and sustainable agricultural practices and how that relates to human health and environmental issues. In the summer of 2013, she and her family relocated to a 40-acre farm, which I'm super jealous about. On that farm, she implements these strategies in order to raise high-quality food and really impact food sourcing. So Dr. Jackson is currently certified with the Institute of Functional Medicine at Cleveland Clinic, which focuses on reversing chronic diseases using a systems-based approach to health, focusing on intensive lifestyle modification, microbiome manipulation, and then toxin reduction. She is the founder of the KU Wichita Functional Medicine Clinic, which focuses on identifying factors that underlie our chronic health issues and chronic disease issues. All right. Welcome, Dr. Jackson. I'm so excited to have you here. I want to let you know it is such a blessing to have people in Western medicine who have been trained the way that we've been trained in an educational setting, but have a mind that's a little stretchier and like a willing to consider other options. It's not something we're trained to do in Western medicine. And when we realize that maybe the approach Western medicine has to fixing health issues in America isn't really working, having that kind of flexibility in our mind to see what else is going on is really important. And it's a blessing for me to have colleagues and people that I can reach out to that maybe have a broader knowledge base than I do. So I really appreciate you. And I want to welcome you to the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I agree. I think we all start off with a lot of curiosity, but there's so much to learn in medical school that we just kind of get hunkered down into what we have to memorize and get through. And then I think they beat it out of us.
Yeah, they beat the curiosity. Don't go asking questions. I've got enough information.
Yeah, I just got to know these facts and this is the way to do it.
You got to pass that test. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Definitely. I think I remember the moment that I had that aha realization that maybe what we had learned wasn't exactly true. I was preparing a talk on fat and heart disease and, you know, really starting to question this whole, like, you know, saturated fat causes heart disease. And I remember where I was at. I was at my kitchen table. It was like 5 a.m. And I was researching the guidelines and realized that the head of the American Heart Association had been paid off by the pharmaceutical company where they and had built the building where they made the guidelines. I was like, what? Yeah. And I literally started weeping because I was like, if you can't, you know, I teach and I'm like, we teach this stuff. And if I can't even trust the source of these guidelines, which is kind of the bread and butter background of what we do, how can I do my job? And nobody has time to like do that type of research on every single topic that right. we run into. So it was a real eye-opening experience. I tell you, I got really depressed, thought about quitting medicine. I mean, I think we've all kind of been there.
Yeah.
It's like, what is happening? What is going on?
This is not what I signed up for.
Exactly. Yeah. And I know yeah. in medicine, you know, we do a lot of, you know, I think we all got into, we want to help people, we want to heal people, we want to make people better. And, you know, sometimes you feel like a pill pusher.
Yeah. We realize the deeper you get into it, you realize that's yeah. not really what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just kind of covering up symptoms. When I was in private practice in Pratt, the metropolis of Kansas, I had a guy come in, young guy came in with knee pain and I prescribed Biox, which is now of course off the market, right? It killed all these people. And you know, it's the best anti-inflammatory out there. It was guideline based, whatever. And he kind of looked at me, he's like, I don't want something to cover up the symptoms. I want to know why my knee hurts. And I looked at him, I was incredulous. Like, what are you talking about? This is guideline-based. This is the best evidence-based medicine I have to offer.
Yeah. Crazy whys. Don't go asking the whys.
Of the knee pain, right? It's inflammation. Like, good. This
your,
is
the your knees have been walked on for 60 years. Take this yeah. medicine out the
Slam
door.
Dunk. Yeah, so I think about that person often. I was like, oh, sorry. Now I kind of understand.
I would do such a better job for you now. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. It's humbling. Yeah,
it is. And it is. And it's, you know, like, you know, we all grow, but definitely like so many of us go into medicine with this idea that I'm here to help, I'm here to heal, and then realize that that's just not what the Western medicine approach is.
Yeah.
Right. So on that note, tell me about your philosophy. What is your philosophy on human health?
Well, I think that our bodies are uniquely designed to heal themselves. I mean, if nothing else, based on the fact that we as a species are still here.
Right. Despite ourselves, right?
Yeah, exactly. Despite our biggest efforts. But if you think about what the human body is designed to do, it has multiple overlapping mechanisms to thrive and to heal and to do well. And so I think that a lot of the chronic disease processes that we are seeing, the epidemic of chronic disease, is really the mismatch between our environment and what our bodies are capable of doing. I feel like if we can figure that out and remove the issues, then our body will do its job and do it very well.
Yeah.
And so that's, I spend a lot of time in functional medicine trying to understand what the underlying triggers are that's causing a body to come haywire, produce symptoms, and try to remove those in an effort to restore healing.
Yeah, to let the biology of our bodies do the thing that it does so that we then get to live healthy. Yeah. It's amazing yeah. how that works.
Well, and even in Western medicine, I work mainly in the hospital, and a lot of times we, you know, what we do is we support the body. Yeah, like we can't really fix what's going on, like COVID, for example. We can't really fix COVID, but the body, you know, giving it the right tools and things getting out of its way, a lot of times will heal. And so much of that is what we do. I think we like to pat ourselves on the back that I gave that right beta blocker or whatever at the right time. But
right.
really, I think the body is what is doing the heavy lifting in most cases.
Yeah, it's amazing. So yeah, describe, I think that going into this kind of approach to functional medicine is so helpful because I talk about it a lot. And I don't think that the average American has a real clear understanding of what functional medicine is. So can you describe what you do as a functional med doctor and how it's different from a traditional physician?
Sure. Well, first of all, I will be the first to say it's extremely poorly named.
Right.
Right. I mean, you say functional medicine and it really doesn't, no one understands. They think it has to do with, you know, function, like physical functioning, which, you know, a lot of the PM&R guys deal with and kinesiology.
Oh, right. The rehab people. Yeah.
Yeah. It really needs a new branding. But so the best way to describe functional medicine is, you know, as I described to my patients, it's about the underlying root cause of what's going on. And so, you know, we link things together kind of the opposite of how we were trained in Western medicine, where, you know, in Western medicine, we're trained, if it's a heart problem, that's, you know, that's cardiology. And if it's a kidney problem, that's nephrology. And if it's a brain problem, that's neurology. And there's not a lot of overlap between those things. It's the opposite in functional medicine. So, you know, when you think about the root causes of disease or wellness, you're looking at a lot of things like nutrition, sleep, physical activity, stress, relationships. Those are kind of foundational. And then the other things that we spend a lot of time talking about, so much trauma. Oh my gosh, especially sexual assault as a child. I uncover a lot of that in my practice. Mm-hmm. The toxins, the number one killer worldwide. And, you know, you think about the, you know, certainly the viruses are toxic. Our food environment is toxic. And then
all the things, right?
All the things, you know, the molds, the metals. And then unfortunately, especially in Kansas, gosh, the environmental toxins, that's my big frustration is all of these poisons that are man-made that we're shoving into our environment.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about the fight I got into with the farmers next door?
No. So for everybody, the listeners, and I told everybody that, you know, in the intro, I mentioned that you moved to this farm, but I do want you to talk about your farm because Jen lives on this farm and I think what she does up there is amazing, but tell me about the fight with the neighbors.
The fight with the farmer. Yeah. So we live on 40 acres. We do grass finished beef. We have pasture chickens. Sometimes we do pork and we have honeybees. Anyways, so the land next to ours is being leased to an alfalfa farmer and unfortunately conventional alfalfa farming where they spray multiple times a year. And a couple of years ago, they had sprayed and the pesticide drift destroyed 7 of our beehives. And then this spring they sprayed and 2 of my chickens were dead the next day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was bad. And so we've been trying to get a hold of them to ask them to let us know. And I mean, there's just all these issues. Anyways, the farmer's wife showed up on our doorstep complaining that a couple of our calves had jumped the fence and was eating the grass next to their alfalfa field. And when I realized who it was, I got really excited and I said, hey, I just want to let you know that we had this problem with drift. And hey, if you could just let, she was so rude to me and like kind of snuffed and was like, there, you know, the stuff that we spray does not kill honeybees and is totally safe for chickens and stomps off. And my husband went lizard brain and drove over there. And, you know, it was so sad because I looked at, and this sounds judgmental, I don't mean it to be, but you know, these chemicals are endocrine disruptors and they wreak havoc on our sex hormones and our insulin levels and that sort of thing. And, you know, the farmer was 400 pounds. And the daughter was probably 9 and looked like she was having precocious puberty. And the son was like in 17 and was already obese. And I'm like, you call these things totally safe. I mean, that's,
but clearly there's something wrong.
Clearly. And she talked about how they sprayed them all over their own property. And I'm like, and looking at her like, and you don't, I mean, they don't see this. They don't.
You know, again,
no, Western medicine is very good at telling patients that obesity is because you eat too much and don't exercise enough.
Or it's your genetics, right? We're genetics, bigger bones. And that is one of the things that I see very different in Western medicine versus what we do and what you do and in a real medicine setting versus what I do in a coaching setting. But our standards for what quote unquote is health and what quote unquote is normal in a functional setting are very different than the standards of what's quote unquote normal in a traditional medicine setting.
I agree. I think we talk a lot about what's optimal.
Yes.
And that, you know, that's an evolving field, the longevity medicine. I think it's fascinating and we're learning so much. Yeah. So it's kind of ever changing and evolving, but what a fun area to study.
No kidding. Yeah. So, but it's really interesting because a lot of people are not hearing what is even possible for their health
from
a traditional medical situation, you know, setting. So it's very interesting. And that's definitely you know, a huge difference between what you do in functional medicine versus, you know, what's expected from the, you know, insurance companies to meet the standard of care, right?
Right. Yeah. So yeah, the typical patient that comes to me has been, most of the patients that I get have some type of diagnosed medical issue, and they've kind of run the gamut of the subspecialists in Western medicine, and they're either not getting anywhere or they're frustrated with the recommendations. They don't want to take the medications that they're being recommended, and they're looking for a different approach or another way. What else is possible? Yeah. And so some of my patients that come to me are kind of one and done. They just want to hear what else is out there, my opinion on something. Is there another way? And then other patients come actively wanting to try to reverse an underlying process. And so we work with them however long they want to, you know, work together.
Yeah.
The problem with functional medicine is it's a lot of work for the patient.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to, and so I try to screen people and say, you know, are you really ready for this approach? I remember I got really excited about an MS patient who came to my practice. And I must not have screened her very well, because at the end of our conversation, I spent an hour and a half with her. At the end of the conversation, she said, "So basically what you're telling me is that my disease is my fault because I eat poorly." It's like, oh no, that is not at all what I intended to say. That's no, not.
I'm actually trying to tell you, you have a lot of power to make changes so that you don't have to be sick with this anymore.
That's Sorry, exactly what I was trying to tell her. Right. So I felt terrible. That was years ago, when I still feel bad about that interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely went off the deep end on that one. So I try to be a little more careful.
It is funny how I think that we get excited when we realize, and when we see our people who are willing to make the changes, and we see the like leaps and bounds and really transformations that they can create in their life. Like, we get super excited and we want it for everybody. We're like, no, you can fix this. And they're like, not ready for it.
You can totally fix this. Yeah, I said the same thing. I was in the hospital recently, and I got really excited about a patient that was really dying from her morbid obesity. And I was like, we can fix this. And yeah, it didn't, the conversation didn't go well.
Right. You know, I have
the same page. And
yeah. The more that I very much, I think in my early, like even my early years of medicine, like even in traditional medicine training, I was like, stop smoking cigarettes. Like, that's why you can't breathe. You know what I mean? Like, why is this hard for you to put together? But then when you dig into the production of cigarettes or of our food, you know, if you look at Michael Moss's work, and, you know, and you're like, oh, they're actually creating it so that it hijacks our neurochemistry, so we want it all the time.
Absolutely.
And then I'm like, no, it's totally not your fault. But here's the good news. You totally have agency to change it. That's great news, you know? But yeah, I don't think people realize that part. And it's a little disheartening and upsetting that the FDA doesn't do more to protect people from these kinds of things.
Did you hear the latest? I heard this yesterday in my car. One of the pharmaceutical companies was advertising an anti-obesity medication or something. And their message was, it's more than about your willpower. It's willpower and biology. I was so offended.
Yeah.
I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
Yeah. They create the problem and then they create the result. They do. As long as you keep paying them, they'll give you the, yeah. So yeah,
just like Coca-Cola and the energy movement. I mean, that whole, I don't know if you read all that conspiracy documents that they uncovered to create this, it's your responsibility, all calories count, blah, blah, blah.
To take
the limelight off the fact that their, you know, beverages are directly causing disease.
Directly causing disease and created in a way that you crave it all the time.
Right. Hijacks your brain.
Yeah.
It's so, and it's such a social justice issue. There's just so many layers to our food environment that, we could talk about that all day.
No kidding. And wouldn't that be fun? That sounds like a conversation for a long hike. I want to know, I kind of want to hear your depth of knowledge on the science behind stress and trauma. Are they similar? I certainly know, I always describe it to my clients as your brain and body, your physiology, your biology does not know the difference between the stress of a bill that came in that was unexpected or the stress of a saber-toothed tiger chasing you. What happens physiologically is the same. One, I want to know how you explain that to folks as far as stressors and the impact on our health, but then also how trauma, past trauma, continues to create, the book, The Body Keeps the Score, is that I feel like it's a very long title and I never get it right, but kind of how our body does hold on to traumas even when they're past. What's the biology behind that?
Yeah, so I think to your first question about stress, that's exactly how I explain it to patients is, you know, that our adrenal axis was made for a very specific reason. You know, it was to get us away from an immediate short-term threat.
Yeah.
And when that threat is resolved, you either die because you get eaten, or in a couple minutes you're standing at the watering hole, right? So no big deal, and you return back to baseline. But in our current environment, that's not the case. We don't ever return to baseline. I know, just driving into work.
Yes. Yes.
Have you heard that we have continuous glucose monitors? I guess one of the next things coming is the cortisol monitors.
Yeah, I have heard about that.
I think that's going to revolutionize our idea about our stressful environments and what it's doing to our hormonal axes. I'm very excited for that because I think it's going to bust through some of the biology of that. I've had, if you've ever had a patient with elevated cortisol levels, it's impossible to lose weight.
Oh, you right.
Not eat for days and they'll still gain weight. It's the, right. That's the idea of the hormone, right? Is to conserve and reroute the energy. So, I use the same analogy with my patients. In terms of trauma, yes, trauma is super interesting. So, you know, our brain, again, getting back to our bodies are amazing at thriving long-term. Traumatic memories are stored differently in the body than a regular memory. You know, I can think back and recall maybe what I did yesterday or what I had to eat or whatever. But if you've had a significant trauma in your life, you know, our brain breaks that memory up and stores it in different locations. And so you can't quite maybe recall sometimes. Maybe a smell will incite a feeling. Or a visualization of something similar will cause you to have a panic attack, but you may not know why. Yeah. And that's just a protective mechanism of the body. In terms of the pathophysiologic processes, though, you know, it gets into all the interleukins and cytokines.
Really?
Yeah. So that's interesting pathophysiology there. And of course, it mixes it up with the adrenal axis because the body, you know, attack. So I think trauma is something that we're not, at least in Western medicine, we're not trained to really think about much.
No, yeah.
And it's hard to ask those questions, or at least if you're not used to asking those questions, I think it's hard. And I often think that patients, even if they know about their traumas, they don't necessarily understand that, you know, something that happened to you when you were 4 years old could be having consequences on your health as an adult. But that's absolutely what the literature says.
How interesting.
Most people in that, you know, are in social work and that sort of thing are familiar with the ACE score, the adverse childhood events. Yeah. So, you know, the number on your ACE score directly correlates to the number of chronic disease processes you're dealing with later in life.
Something's going on there.
Yeah. Right? Your body absolutely remembers. Whenever we uncover significant traumas like that, I'm always reaching out to my, colleagues in psychology. We have so many tools now to deal with that, with cognitive behavioral therapy and EMDR. And of course, very excited to see what happens with the psychedelics that's coming our way very soon, I think. So I think that's going to give us many more tools in the tool chest to deal with and reprogram, desensitize, and help heal those traumas instead of just kind of dealing with them.
Right. And I think it's also so interesting societally how we have stigma associated to a way that keeps those traumas repressed, that we don't want to deal with them. They don't want to bring them up. I don't want to tell anybody, but yet I can't fix my chronic stomach pain. You know what I mean? Right. Which is the classic correlation between, you know, childhood trauma and what we see as adults is, oh, if you've got somebody who's got chronic stomach pain and you've worked them up and you've scoped them and you've done all that, you probably then need to ask what happened when you were a kid, you know?
Yeah. In functional medicine, I always take a timeline on patients, and it's just beautiful how those things unfold. You know, they were raped when they were five, and when they were 15, they developed their first autoimmune disease. It's like, yeah,
right.
It's absolutely linked. It's absolutely linked. So that's fun because we can actually get to the underlying, okay, yeah, we can, you know, we can do all this stuff with your nutrition and sleep and whatever, but really what we're going to need to do is we're going to need to dial into that trauma.
We're going to need to unpack that.
Yeah,
which so interesting.
Usually it brings a lot of tears.
And we can numb you out. I mean, we can give you methotrexate and we can treat your pain, you know, in a rheumatoid situation. We can do all of those things. It's not fixing anything.
No.
And it's just creating this dependence on the system. And the side effects from those meds are awful. I mean, awful. So yeah, it's interesting. And nobody in Western medicine is talking about that stuff.
Not much. Not much.
How interesting. All right. So I want you to tell the story of what brought you to this kind of medicine practice, this practice.
Oh, wow. You want the long version?
I like the long version.
Yeah. I've been on this path for a very long time. It started in college.
Before Jen starts into this, I want to say what Jen told me when I met her and I was like, hey, yeah, you do this functional medicine. Like, what's a good book? And she like gave me a recommendation. I think it was the Omnivore's Dilemma is the recommendation you gave me. And then you said to me, be careful, Alice, how deep you go down this hole. It's a really deep hole. And you have been so right. I've enjoyed the travel, but it is a deep hole. So yeah. So tell me about your long path here.
Yeah, it's very long. So in college, I worked in a cancer research lab and they had this cell cycle inhibitor that they couldn't sequence. And so we were still doing crude extraction. It was from brains. And so a couple times a week, I would drive to small towns near, I was at K-State, so Manhattan, and I would get cow brains from slaughterhouses. And and we called them the brain buckets. It was the whole process. But in doing that, I saw some terrible things. And I'm not against eating animals. But I am against treating animals the way I saw some of them get treated. No, none of God's creatures should have been treated that way. And so this was before Pinterest and before the internet.
Yeah.
I'm dating myself. And so, you know, the normal response to that is you become a vegetarian, right?
Right.
That's what I did. There were some really cool hipster people in my biology group that were a little bit older than I was. And I thought they were awesome and they were vegetarians. So that's what I did. And, you know, what it did is it destroyed my health.
Because you know what's vegetarian? Rice Krispie treats, Twizzlers, rice, French fries, Dr. Peppers, vegetarian all the way.
I became a granitarian. It was bread and cheese. And, you know, back then when you go to a restaurant and order vegetarian, it was bread and
pasta,
cheese. I mean,
pasta,
whatever. So that was responsible for at least 5 to 8 pounds and lots of gut issues and all sorts of problems that way. And so that took about 5 years of like kind of wrestling back and forth what I was doing. So I'm going through med school. Anyways, I eventually went back to eating meat, but was very confused. And then we moved to Pratt, the metropolis, and I was so excited because I was like, this is a small town surrounded by farms. We're going to have like the best food. And we had no food. We lived in a food desert. And I was so confused by that. I didn't understand. And I was like, how can we be around all these farms and not have any access to food? Well, then that's when I learned about commodity crops and how we grow these commodity crops to harvest them, to take them to a concentrated animal feeding operation so you can have a cheap hamburger at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And so that was an eye-opening experience. I learned a lot about food insecurity. And so then the next chapter was really when kind of Michael Pollan started writing, you know, Botany of Desire was a really great book. I love that. But Omnivore's Dilemma was kind of the turning point for me. It hit me at a time also when I was having some health problems. When I was a teenager, I had Graves' disease, so autoimmune hyperthyroidism. And by this time in my 30s, I had developed Hashimoto's, so under autoimmune underactive thyroid. And so I read about Omnivore's Dilemma. I was like, this is amazing. This is what I want to do. And so
yes.
We moved to this acreage. We went to Joel Salatin's farm in West Virginia.
Yes. We
learned how to do rotational grazing. All of it just made perfect sense. It was suddenly like the light turned on for me. All those questions I'd had when I was in the cancer research lab, it was like, this is what I've been looking for, is like how you mimic biological systems that you see in nature and reenact them for improvements to the land. And so, you know, Salatin's, you know, with rotational grazing, you're actually increasing biomass. You're using herbivores for what they were meant for. You're using omnivores on the farm like they're meant to be used. And so it's just beautiful, this kind of symphony of, and it made a lot of sense to my scientific brain. So then I started reading about, you know, food and autoimmune disease, and I actually reversed my Hashimoto's with nutritional changes. And so all of that happened about the same time. And I was like, man, if I can do this, like, what? I've never heard of this before. Like, I've never been taught this in medical school. I didn't know this existed. You know, autoimmune diseases just fall out of the sky and hit you on the head, right? You're just unlucky. And we have good medicine to treat them. And I was like, wow, like, I'm not that smart. Maybe somebody else has figured this out. So I started searching. And, you know, I found kind of integrative medicine, which is great. That's kind of using, Western medicine along with kind of more herbal things and that sort of thing. That's right. Not really what I was interested in. I really was interested in reversing disease processes. And that's when I finally stumbled into functional medicine. It takes a little while to train. And so I kind of dipped my toe in first. I did they're called advanced practice modules. And I did the cardiac one because I have a lot of background in cardiology. I ran a heart failure clinic. And so I remember, and it was online, that I had done this online and, not really committing yet. And I remember yelling at my screen, like the stuff that they were presenting, I was like, you're wrong. That's not the way it is. That's not evidence-based. Cause I'd had a lot of people, I'm at the university and I have a lot of people telling me that, oh, that's not evidence-based and blah, blah, blah. But of course this, you know, IFM's through Cleveland Clinic. And so
there's some evidence.
Yeah. And then they're presenting like 150 references to what they're talking about. And I was like, oh,
maybe there is evidence.
And that's when I got so frustrated, is once I started looking at it, I was like, there is evidence. It's been there all this time. And why have I never heard about this? Well, I have never seen this. One of my favorite things I learned early on was about reversing diabetic peripheral neuropathy. I was like, what do you mean? We give Lyrica, we give gabapentin, you can't reverse. It was a great study. They did biopsies of the nerve. They gave them high dose B vitamins. And then 6 months later, they re-biopsied and it was gone. I was like, what?
Yeah. How much more evidence can there be?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, because it's not these, you know, ginormous thousands of people, randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trials.
Sponsored by the drug manufacturer.
Sponsored by Pfizer. Yeah. Then, you know, it's not considered evidence-based.
It's not real.
Yeah. So that's kind of, that was my very long journey. It took a long time to get there and it's still evolving. I mean, there's so much to learn and be exposed to, and there's a lot of different voices in this community too, that you have to kind of think about. A lot of really smart people that have figured this out way before me. So,
okay. So you talked a little bit about your farm. I want you to dig into it, because this is like one of the coolest things. Like whenever I tell people about Jennifer Jackson, I'm like, yeah, she does all this stuff, but she has this farm. And so tell me a little bit about basically how you're implementing your knowledge of medicine, your breadth, I mean, like wide and deep knowledge of medicine in your life, as far as like creating your own food sourcing, really is what it is. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So I think in part of this journey, you know, like we talked about a little bit earlier about how you get upset when you realize that, you know, that the food companies have hijacked our brains with these artificial food-like substances. I just got angry. That's my reaction to stuff.
I do. I always tell people,
yeah, I'm not doing it. Mad. Yeah. And that we just decided we were going to vote ourselves off that island. Like, it's in the, you know, best of our abilities. We were going to provide ourselves an alternative source of food. And so, and then, you know, of course that also goes into the, all the animal welfare issues too, is that, you know, I didn't want to be part of a system that treated animals in the way that industrialized farming does. It's terribly sad. And so that's what we did. So my in-laws were raising longhorns for show, for horn length. And when you do that, you get a lot of dudes that, you know, don't make the cut. And these cows were just kind of hanging out.
And with their short horns.
Yeah, with the shorter horns, yeah. So that's what we used to start our own, you know, herd. And the other nice thing, there's several nice things about longhorns. They're, you know, they're native. They do very well on grass. They don't, their pelvises are shaped to the fact that you never have to go out in the middle of the winter and pull a cow. That's, we started our farm in 2014 and we've never had a death from a delivery.
A birthing death, yeah.
Yeah, we've never lost a cow during birth. They just kind of eat grass and have sex and have babies.
They're living the life, man.
They are. They're just kind of, and it's kind of fun. It's a very hands-off way of farming. You're just kind of like, you'll show up and like, there's two more babies. You're like, oh, hey.
You guys been doing your thing. Hey. Strong work.
No, right. And that's, they awesome. Seem to know, like, I know some of our friends that do cows, they like, they pull babies off moms at a certain, then wean them and stuff. We don't do any of that. Yeah. I figure the cows know when, and yeah, they seem to produce just fine. And it's low drama. So they, you know, our cows are born on farm and they live here until their one last day. We have done a lot of, you know, the slaughtering process is very important. And we've, you know, over time kind of learned best practices there. And we take our longhorns to Yoder because they do such a good job. They take them down in the truck. The animal never leaves the truck. And we load them the day before. They're very calm. And, you know, they don't know what's coming. So
curiously, why is it important for you that the animal is calm? Is it because of their experience, or is there also a health benefit to you in consumption of the meat?
Yeah, so both. So first of all, I don't, you know, we don't want our animals to be scared, and that's terrible, you know, terrible for them.
And that's an emotional thing that we don't want it to, I mean, like, that's like just a, like, an integrity thing, right? Like, my integrity is, I don't want to be like terrorizing animals, right?
Right, exactly.
But it's then, more than that.
It is, because from a health standpoint, all of those stress hormones
get flooded come into, in the meat to us. Yeah.
Yeah, get flooded into the animal. And so if, you know, if an animal dies in a super stressful condition, then potentially those kind of stress hormones are also going to be passed along to the consumer. And so, there's also benefit.
yeah. Like science, health benefits. Yeah. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So yes, I love what you do with your farm. Like, I keep joking that I'm going to come out and live on your farm. You're just going to find me. I'm going to be out there. It's like two more calves and Delaine out on my farm.
Well, anytime you want to start your own, we have plenty of cows that we can just give right on to you, and you can start your own farm.
Someday that may happen for me. It's a kind of a dream of mine. It's always kind of been a dream of mine. So we'll see. So lastly, I kind of want to dig into what you think that the state of health in America is, and what is the biggest obstacle to Americans being healthy?
What health?
right.
At least
the standard American diet. I only think it's totally appropriate that that acronym is SAD, SAD, standard American diet, because it is sad, right? Yeah. So yeah, the health of America is definitely, what health? I love that.
Oh, you know, and everyone loves to talk about the expense of healthcare and, you know, where we're headed and how we're going to be bankrupt from it. And I agree, all of that is true. I hopefully people are starting to wake up to the fact that we don't have to be this way. You are so in charge of so many aspects of your health that maybe you've not even thought about before. And, you know, people talk about lifestyle changes. Oh, it's hard. Is it really? Is it hard? Or
you know what else is hard? Amputation of some of your leg. You know, that's really hard too, right?
Yeah, not being able to move. Look at our kids. Oh my gosh. And the mental health issues with our children, all of that's related.
And it's all hard. None of it's easy.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
I do think foundational changes can be, nutrition is the place to start. It impacts so many things and you can make changes so quickly, you know, with the microbiome data, what did they say? 3 weeks, you can flip inflammatory processes really fast. And so, the easy things to do is to get off ultra processed foods.
Yeah.
So that's such an uphill battle. I'm on a school board and I brought up maybe changing. Oh my gosh.
Ryan. You stop feeding my kids Pop-Tarts in the morning.
I know, right? Can we maybe get away from donuts and Pop-Tarts and maybe make the kids some eggs? I don't know.
Call me crazy.
Heresy.
I know.
Yeah, of course the rules, I mean, despite what Michelle Obama tried to do, the rules are, they're still very much on calories and low fat and they're still stuck on that mantra.
And they probably count strawberry Pop-Tarts. And I'm not saying this to be facetious. They probably count it as a fruit.
Right. Of course. Just
they
like
count ketchup as a vegetable. As a vegetable.
Yeah. Even though aren't tomatoes a fruit?
Oh god. And isn't it loaded with sugar? That's totally not what we're talking about.
It's tough to make. I think it's tough to make, although government policy has to be part of it, people have the power,
the agency, definitely.
Yeah. And if you have any question about that, just look what people have done just with big ag and changing food. For example, Chipotle. Okay. So people demanded, that they didn't want genetically modified organisms in their food, and Chipotle responded, and then Campbell's responded. I mean, just that. And that issue is like, people don't really understand what they're talking about most of the time, but they knew they didn't want it. And by God, industry responded. Yeah. In the Grocery Manufacturers Association, the only group that's growing is the organic sector. People are trying to do their best. Now, of course, what happens is they make lots of organic junk food and you think you're right.
It turns out, even if it's an organic cookie, it's still a cookie.
It's still junk food. So there's a lot of mixed messages. I think that in the health sphere, the thing that frustrates me is all the camps that have popped up, keto versus vegan versus paleo. We're all fighting.
The one's right for everybody.
We're just fighting each other. And the whole, as we fight, Cargill's laughing all the way to the bank. So.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And the other frustrating thing that's really, really sad for our children that you brought up is that we feed these foods that by medical evidence, by the literature out there, is tied to ADD and ADHD. And then we medicate a large population of our kids while they're in school for ADHD for the breakfast that they ate at the school. It's such a twisted, sad. I mean, it's a very tragic situation we got there on our hands. You know what I mean? And it is. It's not that we're all genetically bound to be ADD and on med. No, it is not about our biology has set us on a path for disease. Like you said, our biology always sets us on the path for healing. Always. It's amazing that way. We have to stop offending our bodies. But yeah,
I agree.
It's so interesting. So the one thing that you would tell Americans is get out of the ultra processed foods.
Right. Which is, it's easy to say, right? But that's a dissection of your life. I mean, that does take,
it takes planning and it does take a lot of different systems in your world, but then the understanding that the food, that ultra processed food is created so that you never get full from it and you want more of it and you want more of that brand specifically. And each brand is vying to make sure theirs is more desirable to you. Yeah. So it is definitely, it's not, we say it's simple because we have cut it from our lives primarily. So we're not under the effect of that neurochemistry, but it's definitely there's a lot of different parts that need to be fixed on that. Definitely. So
as we speak, my roast is in the crock pot.
I love it. Right. Cause that's how we do it. Right. So lastly, you know that I have a lot of clients. I have clients all over the country. I had a client in South Africa. If she's listening, hello. But before we get off, I want, how can people find you if they want your help? How can people get the information that you have for them? How do they get a hold of that?
Sure. So if you're interested in functional medicine, and looking for a provider in your area, you can go to the Institute for Functional Medicine website, and they have a search engine. It's Find a Provider, and you can see who and what is available in your area. So that's a really good way to look for someone that's local. You know, we are located in Wichita, Kansas. We're at the KU School of Medicine in Wichita. And so patients can find us. We have a website, KU Functional Medicine. If you're just interested in kind of knowing a little bit more about what we do, patients that are wanting an appointment, we have an appointment line that just, it's like a recorded, like you leave a message type thing. That number is 316-290-9766. Although a warning, we have quite a waiting list right now. So just,
which is awesome for you. I love that.
Well, what I need is a partner. So
do you know anybody?
Yes. Is anyone listening? We're advertising right now for a PA nurse practitioner to grow. And then I think we'll be ready for another medical doctor within 2 years. So
nice.
Yeah. If you want to come to Wichita.
I love that for you though, because it's amazing work that you're doing and that it's
the whole idea was to bring it to the university, because we're trying to teach this model to our medical students and residents, because they are the future of medicine. And if we don't introduce these concepts early, it takes too long. like for me, it takes too long to figure it out on the backside.
Yeah. How many years were you practicing before you were like, oh, we're doing this, I need to do this differently?
Yeah.
How many years do you think you practiced?
Probably a good 15 years before that kind of epiphany hits of, oh, wow. Now I had become disenfranchised before that and was like, what is going on? But the real like knock upside the head, like I need to change this or I need to get out, that I'd probably been practicing 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely like getting this into the medical schools and letting them know, hey, you know, it's fine. There's going to always be patients that just want the medicine. That's totally cool.
I treat them in hospital every day.
But for those patients who are coming and saying, but I don't want this. And all that we give as Western med traditionally trained physicians is, well, this is just what we treat it with, this med. Right. This is the standard of care. This is what we do.
Like I said earlier, here's your Vioxx.
Yeah, here's your Vioxx. No, I'm doing it right. Yeah. So I think that that's awesome that you're getting it into the med students and all of that. So yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add to this?
Oh, thank you for what you're doing. You send patients my way, but I send patients your way.
I know you do. I love them.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Such a great resource to have.
Yeah. And it is, and just the more of us that are out there saying, hey, there's another way. If you want it, like it's out here. Let's figure that part out. I think that's amazing. And letting people know our human bodies are not meant to be sick. Biologically, we are not driven to illness. We are driven to wellness if we can just get out of our own way. It's amazing and empowering. I love that part of what we do. All right, Jen, thank you so much for being here with us. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks. It's great to talk to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.